This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Quite a good scene, isn't it? One man crazy, three very sane spectators. Yes. Yes, the bandits.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to Pop Goes the Classics here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. My name is Scott Criscolo. If you're listening for the first time, it's great to have you and to welcome you to one of our newer shows. If you're not new, then you already know what Pop Goes the Classics is. It is kind of an addendum or an offshoot of Pop Goes the Movies, which is a fantastic program. Pod blast we have here on the Place to Be Nation Pop Feed. What that is one or more of us fine, talented podcasters here review a current movie that is out in theaters right now. Well, we decided to go one step further and do Pop Goes the Classics, which is we sit back and we review a classic film. Well, I decided and talked to our boss, Andy Atherton, and thought it would be a good idea to get the ball rolling on Pop Goes the Classics here in the month of October with horror classics. This is the second one, actually. If you're listening to this like years later, it doesn't matter what order you listen to. I'm just marking time. The first one we did, I was starting the Marvel. I knew I was going to do that. I'm going to stick that. I'm going to keep the error in there, though. Just, you know, break the fourth wall. The Universal Monster Universe, I guess it was called. And, of course, those were the awesome horror movies from back in the day that took place between 1931 and 1956. The very first one, there were some that took place in the 20s. If you want to hear the history of it, check out the Dracula pod blast. But they did start in the 20s with The Hunchback of Notre Dame and Phantom of the Opera, which was redone in the 40s. But the first real proper one was, of course, the 1931 adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi. Well, later on in 1931 was the next of the big six. And this one may have actually been even more successful than the first one. I'm talking about James Whale, the director, and his adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. This is the one that probably put the horror universe on the map, even more so than Dracula. And no knock on Bela Lugosi whatsoever. But Frankenstein is probably the one that really put horror to the masses. And James Whale, led, of course, by producer Carl Laemmle Jr., who, of course, the Laemmles and Universal Pictures was big into horror, at least for the first two-thirds of the decade of the 1930s, they did a tremendous job of marketing and getting the horror movies out to the public. But Frankenstein was the one that really got the ball rolling. And, of course, James Whale, again, was the director and starred a guy by the name of William Henry Pratt. You're probably thinking, who the hell's that guy? Well, you know him by his stage name, Boris Karloff. Yes, of course. Who else? Frankenstein himself, the monster. Also starring Colin Clive, who played Dr. Frankenstein, Mae Clark, John Bowles, and, of course, Edward Van Sloan, who we talk about often. He was, of course, Van Helsing in Dracula. He was in a similar role in this movie, and he'd play roles similar to that in some other Universal Monster films. Just a reminder that a lot of people may not know off the top of their heads, Frankenstein is not the name of the monster. Frankenstein was the name of the scientist, Dr. Frankenstein. The monster Frankenstein was not called Frankenstein. He was called the monster. It was just easier to just say Frankenstein, and people kind of put two and two together and kind of marked the character of the monster as Frankenstein, just for the sake of having something to mark or having time. Obviously, Dracula was a big hit, both the English and Spanish versions, and you'll wonder why I'm referring to a Spanish version. Check out the first Pop Goes the Classics podcast, where I talked about Dracula, and you'll know more about that. But they decided, of course, they needed to keep going, so they took the other great horror novel of the time. Of course, Bram Stoker's Dracula was one, and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which was written in 1818, was the other book. Now, it was also a play. Peggy Webling was the director and producer of the play. And that was similar to how they got Dracula. They didn't just take Dracula from Bram Stoker's book and rolled with it. Dracula was actually on Broadway 7 years earlier in 1924, played by Bela Lugosi. Boris Karloff did not play the monster on Broadway. As mentioned, kind of a backtrack here, Universal Studios lost a ton of money in 1930, almost $2.2 million in revenues. And $2.2 million in 1930 is no small piece of change. Within 48 hours of its opening at the Roxy Theater on February 12th, 1931, Dracula sold 50,000 tickets, $700,000 profit, largest of Universal's releases that year. Well, as a result, the head of production, Carl Laemmle Jr., who was all over horror, decided, yes, more horror. Now, let's talk about casting for a minute. Following his success in Dracula, Bela Lugosi thought, well, I kicked ass as him. I'm sure they're going to want me to play Frankenstein, too. To be quite honest, I don't know if Bela Lugosi would have been the right choice for Frankenstein. He was not big in stature. Bela was a shorter guy. The actor was expected to play the monster to keep his famous name on the bill. Bela Lugosi actually didn't want to play the monster. He wanted to play the scientist. He wanted to play Dr. Henry Frankenstein. It's alive! It's alive! But after several disastrous makeup tests, Bela Lugosi did not look good in the makeup. Did not look good at all. Bela said, all right, I'm done. I'm Dracula and that's it. I'll come back another day. Although this is often regarded as one of the worst decisions of Lugosi's career, technically, in actuality, the part that Lugosi was offered was not the same character that Karloff eventually played. The original, the initial director was not James Whale, by the way, who was a fine British director. It was Robert Flory, who had recharacterized the monster as a simple killing machine. No human interest, no pathos, he was just a murdering monster. Which was not what the Shelley novel had for the monster, but what Boris Karloff executed as the monster. No pun intended. We'll get to that in a second. Lugosi famously said, "I was a star in my country." Remember, he was Hungarian. "I will not be a scarecrow," meaning I'm not going to be just some guy that doesn't talk and walks around and, you know, chokes people. Flory later wrote that the Hungarian actor didn't show himself very enthusiastic for the role and he didn't want to play it. However, the decision may not have been Lugosi's in any case, since most recent evidence suggests that when he was kicked off the project, along with Flory, is when James Whale asked for the property. Now, Whale had come from England, and he wanted to do Frankenstein. Except he wanted to do Shelley's Frankenstein, not some souped-up cinematic bombast. You know what I mean? Something that you would probably see today in modern cinema, where you take a book and you totally bastardize it and make it something completely different than what it's meant to be. Well, that's exactly what James Whale did not do. What James Whale did do was that he stayed as truthful to the story as possible. As for Karloff, he was a guy that worked for Universal, did some other bit parts, but they realized, wow, he's a big dude. Tall, formidable, and he was the one that that they looked at and said, James Whale said, "I want that guy as Frankenstein." And he was picked. Actors who worked on the project either were or became familiar to all of us as fans of the Universal horror films. Frederick Kerr was the old Baron Frankenstein, Henry's father. Lionel Belmore was Herr Vogel, Dwight Fry, and the rest of the cast. The film opened in New York City, December 4th, 1931, grossed $53,000 in a week. Flory and Lugosi were given the Murders in the Rue Morgue as a result, as a consolation. Lugosi would end up playing Frankenstein's monster in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman a decade later when his career was kind of in decline and he needed the money. So as you know, the story goes, in the Bavarian Alps, Henry Frankenstein, a young scientist, and his assistant Fritz the Hunchback. No, Igor was not the Hunchback assistant. His name was Fritz. We would get an Igor eventually in the monster universe in a future Frankenstein movie. I'll get to that in a minute. They pieced together a human body. They've been stealing them from graves, which was illegal, and obviously, of course, still is. Dr. Frankenstein creates human life through electrical devices, which he has perfected. He sends Fritz to a school where Dr. Waldman, Henry's old professor, teaches to steal a brain. Fritz drops the normal brain, decides to take another one. The problem is, it's the brain of a criminal. Genius, huh? His fiance, Dr. Frankenstein's fiance Elizabeth, wondered. He keeps hiding himself up in this tower in his castle, and he doesn't talk, and he only comes out once in a while, and he's all, you know, a recluse. Well, eventually, of course, they put the body together, bring it up to the top of the tower during a thunderstorm. A terrific crash of thunder booms. The electric machines flash, crackle, and buzz. The hand infamously moves up off of the table, and that is, of course, when Dr. Frankenstein does his famous, "It's alive! It's alive!" which is used in, like, it's been used in songs. It's pretty funny. Now, of course, Frankenstein was an innocent monster. He was a monster that, you know, didn't know what to do, childlike. You know, he had no motor skills. Frankenstein welcomes it into his lab, asks his creation to sit, kind of learns things. Eventually, he's chained in the dungeon. He escapes. He accidentally kills a little girl because he wants to play with her. And they're throwing rocks in the water. Remember this, he's walking through the field, throws rocks in the water. And then when they run out of rocks, he thinks, oh, well, she seems like she would like to have fun in the water. So he picks her up and throws her in the water. She's too young, she can't swim, and she drowns. He realizes, I think I blew this. And he escapes, or he runs away. Maria is the name of the girl. As we get to the end of the film, carrying his daughter's body. He says she was murdered. The villagers form a search party to capture the creature, bring it to justice. In order to search the whole country, they split into groups. Eventually, the creature knocks Dr. Frankenstein unconscious, carries him off to an old mill. The creature hurls the scientist to the ground. His fall is broken by the vanes of the windmill, saving his life. Some of the villagers hurry him to his home, while the rest set the windmill ablaze, supposedly killing the trapped creature inside. At the end of the film, Frankenstein's father, Baron, celebrates the wedding of his recovered son, Henry, and his daughter, Elizabeth. And his fiance. And a toast to a future grandchild. A tremendous film. And the best part about the Marvel... I keep doing that. The best part about the Universal Monster movies is that they're short. They're all really short. Frankenstein is only 71 minutes. So you could, if you find it, stream it, or if you buy the Blu-rays, Universal did a tremendous 30-disc Blu-ray box set. You can get it for a decent price right now on Amazon or eBay. You could power through them during this time of the year. I mean, I'd watch horror movies all year. I don't really care, but obviously, particularly for October. Usually not that long. And Frankenstein is only 71 minutes. So you could power your way through it quickly. The best part about Frankenstein's look, about the creature's look, and Boris Karloff's makeup, Boris Karloff had dentures. And so he took his top bridge off. Because if you notice, if you watch the movie, you notice that his right side, we were looking at it, it'd be his left side, but his right side, you'll notice there's kind of a cave-in in his face. Well, they thought it would look kind of cool if he was all kind of half out of it. So they took his bridge work out because he wasn't talking, non-speaking. He took the bridge work out and it kind of sunk his face in, making him look more menacing, kind of more grotesque and creepy. Smart move by Boris Karloff there. James Whale did a fantastic job of capturing moments in the film similar to Dracula and what you would see down the line from the other major cinematic releases like The Mummy, which we'll have a Pop Goes the Classics for, Invisible Man also, etc. There wasn't a ton of music in these films. We didn't have soundtracks back in the day. It's not like, you know, Rocky or, what's a good soundtrack? Saturday Night Fever or something like that. That wasn't how life worked in the 30s when it came to music. You didn't have soundtracks. As a matter of fact, Dracula didn't have any music. They added it after the fact. Same thing here. There were scenes in the film, close-ups, the monster running through the woods. They did add music later on in the climax scene with the burning of the old mill. But, and you think it's not easy to do when you're doing it in black and white, but shadows and certain camera angles and the silence made for some truly menacing moments in the film. But the difference here, and this is something that I think makes Mary Shelley a genius and why her book is so good, and I highly recommend reading it, was the monster really a villain? It wasn't like Dracula. Dracula was clearly a villain. Frankenstein was almost like an anti-hero. He just wanted to, look, it wasn't his doing to be created. He was created by another person. He just wanted to see what life was like. He didn't mean to throw Maria in the water and her drowning. He thought they were playing. So that anti-hero feeling makes this movie so good and so much so enriching to watch at a time in 1931 where, you know, in movies you had good guys and you had bad guys. There wasn't like anti-heroes. And in essence, Frankenstein is an anti-hero based on your thinking and the way that Mary Shelley wrote the part. It's pretty impressive, I have to say. Smart move by her. And smart move by James Whale to put it forth on the screen as wonderfully done as he did it. Now, the scene that I'm talking about, in which the monster throws the little girl Marie into the lake and she drowns, always been controversial. You're seeing someone die on screen. On top of that, a child. Well, upon the release of the film, the second part of this scene was cut by state censorship boards in Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and New York. Those states also objected to a line they consider blasphemous that occurred during Frankenstein's exuberance when he first learns the creature's alive. The original relevant passage was, this is what Victor said. Victor said, Henry, in the name of God. And Henry says, in the name of God? Now I know what it feels like to be God. Well, at the time, in today's 2019, I'm sure no one would care, but in 1931, of course, that was, what? So, the state of Kansas requested the cutting of 32 scenes, which if they had been removed, would have made the film like 40 minutes. Jason Joy of the Studio Relations Committee sent censor representative Joseph Breen to urge them to reconsider. Eventually, an edited version was released in Kansas. As with many pre-code films, meaning pre-code, there was no PG, RG, you know, NC-17 back then, of course. Universal made cuts from the original camera negative, and thus the cut footage is often lost. However, the footage of the girl Maria being thrown into the lake was rediscovered during the 1980s in the collection of the film National Film Archive, and it has been reincorporated into modern copies of the film. In Ireland, the film was banned on February 5th, 1942 for being demoralizing and unsuitable for children of, or nervous people. Age-restricted certificates weren't introduced in the country until 1965. And of course, ratings didn't come out till probably the 60s. The decision was overturned, and on March 8th, the film was passed uncut, including the death of the little girl in the lake on March 9th. But the reviews were great. Reviews were absolutely tremendous. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Frankenstein the monster, or the monster, not Frankenstein, was a anti-hero, not a villain. I think that's big. I think that's real big. And in future Frankenstein films that included both Boris Karloff and the ones down the line that would be played by other actors, he would always be treated as such. He'd be manipulated, used like a blunt force object. Son of Frankenstein is big like that. That's a big one. The film was a big hit. In June of 1932, the film had earned a reported in rentals of $1.4 million, which is a ton of money back then. In 1943, Universal reported it had earned a profit of $708,871. By 1953, all the Frankenstein re-releases earned an estimated profit of $12 million. Now, there were a ton of sequels, and of course there were sequels of Dracula as well, and I talked about that. Of course, the big one was 4 years later when they released Bride of Frankenstein in 1935. Of course, Elsa Lanchester plays the monster's bride. The next sequel, Son of Frankenstein, which is actually a personal favorite of mine, that came out in 1939, was made, like all those that followed, without Whale or Clive, the latter of whom had died in 1937. This was Karloff's last full film performance as the monster. Basil Rathbone was in it, so we're talking big-time actors. And Bela Lugosi returned as Igor. And he was actually the real villain in the film. Then The Ghost of Frankenstein was released in 1942. That movie featured a guy we're going to talk about a little bit down the line on Pop Goes the Classics. Lon Chaney Jr. played the monster. Of course, all of you horror fans know that Lon Chaney Jr. was more known for playing the Wolfman. And Bela Lugosi returned as Igor. Then Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman was released in 43. Bela Lugosi played Frankenstein in that one, so he did finally play him. That was also the sequel to The Wolfman, but we won't cross the streams as of yet. Karloff returned to the series, but not the role, in House of Frankenstein. John Carradine played the monster there. Oh, Dracula. He played Dracula, actually. And then House of Dracula did the monster, what we call the Monster Mash. There would be a Universal movie in 1970 called Frankenstein 1970. The scientist, played by Karloff, who actually played Dr. Frankenstein in this one, animate the monster using a nuclear reactor. Now, of course, Frankenstein would be redone a zillion times in various forms. BBC did them. A ton of Frankenstein movies. Of course, one of the main ones was in 1992. I think it was Robert De Niro played Frankenstein. Then, of course, there was, you know, goofy movies like Frankenweenie. Of course, the biggest Frankenstein parody ever is arguably one of the funniest movies of all time, and that was, of course, Young Frankenstein, which was done, of course, by Mel Brooks in 1974. Guillermo del Toro was going to do a version of Frankenstein when they were going to reboot the Universal Monster verse, if you will, in the 2000s. That, of course, never happened. There would be a reboot. They were going to do a series of reboots. That didn't work either. So, really, the best one is the original. So I highly recommend seeking out Frankenstein with James Whale, directed by James Whale, starring Boris Karloff. Of course, Boris Karloff will go on to do many great roles in many things. He, of course, for you younger fans, he was the voice of the Grinch, or the narrator with the Grinch. It is a tremendous role. A tremendous role. Check it out. I highly recommend it. I don't know where you can find it streaming, but again, I just recommend, if you're a diehard horror fan, you've got some money to burn, maybe ask for it for Christmas, go to Amazon and find the Universal Monsters 30-film collection. It has every Universal horror film from 1931 to 1956. If you are a horror fan, a real one, not just slashers, a real horror fan, get it. I did. I finally had some money. I actually got it on Prime Day, so I got like 25% off, so I only got it for like $65. Doesn't seem like a lot, but you're talking about 30 movies on Blu-ray, and it comes with a nice book. Get it. I highly recommend it. So that is it for this special pod blast of Pop Goes the Classics, the 1931 horror classic Frankenstein. My name is Scott Criscolo. You can check me out all over PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check me out on the Pop feed here, of course, on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed also. And we will continue with the pod blasts celebrating the Universal Monsterverse back in the day. If you're listening to these chronologically in order of release, the next one we'll be doing is another Boris Karloff movie in which he played another legendary monster, that monster being The Mummy. No, not the one with Tom Cruise. My God. The Mummy from 1932. Thank you for listening. It's alive! It's alive! Enjoy.